I go out in the field and complete it. And at the end of the day, I had nothing to think about. And at first, that was an incredible luxury, but it wore off very soon. And it's like, I had to start thinking about stuff. Well, that's when they first started coming out with the computers, the Texas Instruments 99.4A used cassette tapes. That was my first one. So I just started self-teaching myself on the computer. So it, to me, it wasn't anything extraordinary. It was just, I loved socializing, getting out, hooting and hollering with people, but to a degree, I don't need to do that every day. So then what else does an entrepreneur do? You keep up with what's going on in your area of interest. And one of the best ways to do that is trade shows.
I searched all over the world, struggling to find it. Then I met my boy, David E. Simons. Yeah. I searched all over the world, struggling to find it. Then I met my boy, David E. Simons. Yeah. Discover my gift, yeah, yeah. Discover my gift, yeah, yeah. With David E. Simons.
Welcome to another episode of How I Discovered My Gift with yours truly, David D. Simons. It is an honor. Am I excited? I'm delighted. I want to introduce to y'all my second father, my second dad, Mr. Ray Miller. We're going to go into his story. I'll give my personal bio, and then Ray can give a breakdown on him. But growing up, I have my actual father, and then I have Ray as my second father, someone who him, his wife, Debbie, my brother, Jimmy, Nick, my sister, Sabrina, they were like, I spent more time with them than other people in my life. And they allowed me to grow with them, alongside them. They took me in as their own son. And to this day, we have a strong bond. And I've always wanted to do this interview because Ray has had such a tremendous impact in my life. As an entrepreneur today, a lot of the things that I learned, believe it or not, Ray, I've shared some of these things with Ray, but a lot of things I observed from Ray when we would play Monopoly, how he would take risk on the game board. And it taught me about risk and the importance of taking risk. And I'd see how Ray was hardworking, right? And built up a company, started as an employee and then built into a company. I did the same thing. I went and started as an employee for a company, then started my own thing and left and built our organization to what it is today. I see how he treats his family and pours into his family. And just, I've modeled and learned so much from Ray. And I thought it'd be a treat for those to hear this conversation I've always wanted to have and ask Ray questions about life, business. So Ray, thank you so much for coming to the show. I truly appreciate you.
Hey, Dave, I'm proud to be here. And thanks for that intro. And, you know, on the other side of that, it's been a pleasure watching you and your brother grow up and just become great members of the community. You care about your fellow people. You surround yourself with great people and you end up doing great things. And so the honor is shared.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. So, Ray, I want to take it back to, I believe it's Texas, right? Were you born and raised in Texas?
No, I was actually born in Santa Rosa, California. But
Santa Rosa. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's take it.
But I was only there for a year, and then a year later, we moved down to Bakersfield, where I'm at now. But then around 4 years old, we moved down to the L.A. area, moved to a few different places down in there. And from there, I went to Texas. On the way to Texas, I turned 13. We had my birthday party at the Grand Canyon. Yeah. And then I stayed out there till graduated high school, and I was kind of at a point in life where I was deciding I was always going to go to college. I was always going to be a lawyer. I knew that at 10 years old. Really? And it never happened. I had an opportunity. The girl I was dating at the time, her dad said, hey, come to work at this oil field company. I love the oil field. That's what my dad did. So, mm-hmm. So I took it, and I knew then if I didn't go to college, if I took this job, then I probably wouldn't go to college. And because I'd heard a lot of people say that, hey, well, I'm just going to do this, make a little money for a while, and then I'll start college a few years later. And pretty much if you're going to go to college, you need to do it right after high school, because that's definitely a Y in the road. So, but, you know, you look back, no regrets, but I do have moments where I'm curious what would have happened if I would have took that different branch on the road. But certainly no regrets. I've got to do a lot of things. I've been able to try out my ideas. I've turned my failures into successes. And you know, I heard a statement the other day that I thought, man, I've kind of lived this my whole life. If you lose out, don't lose out on the lesson. So if you're doing something and it doesn't work, there's still a lesson to be learned. Don't lose out on that.
That's good. I love that. So something I'm curious about. So, wow, that's cool. I had no idea you wanted to be a lawyer. And so you come into the oil fields, and what happens at the oil fields that turns you, I want to know about the journey of, because I remember the days when you were working for another organization. What was the transition happening from working for a company to eventually owning a company? How did that happen?
Yeah, so, you know, you are who you are, and God puts certain things into us, and we develop those, and we get to make our own decisions, that's for sure. And I was working at a company called Creole right out of high school, and a great company. I was loved there. Matter of fact, during the 8 years I was there, I got transferred back to Bakersfield. And then from there, I got a nice promotion and transferred to Houston. And after a very short stint in Houston, less than a year, I was able to transfer back to Bakersfield. Now, the first time I was in Bakersfield, I met Debbie, and who's been my wife now for 38 years.
Yes.
And so when I got transferred back to Houston, it was the classic long distance love affair. Back then we wrote letters on paper, and I would write her letters and put them in the mail and stuff like that. I went on a trip to Colombia, South America, and we were in the Payoa gas camp out in the jungles for almost a month. And she still has this letter to this day, and this was before we were married. And it was a 10-page letter. Just every day I'd write a few lines about, you know, what was happening, kind of a journal of that trip. And so stuff like that, you don't even realize how cool it is and how cool it's going to be later on. And because you're just doing it, you're just living your life today. And so that type of stuff is really fun to look back on. But so how does it transition from being, you know, an employee to an owner? I learned a lot while I was at Creole, and I used to think, man, Creole is one of the luckiest companies I've ever been around because there's so many smart people here. But what I realized is that Creole took care of its people, and they attracted and they kept good people because they cared for them, and you know, loved what they would bring to the table, and it showed. So it wasn't that they were lucky, or maybe you make your own luck, depending on how you want to look at that. So then Jimmy was born, first son. And when I worked at Creole, I traveled a lot. A typical week, I would leave Sunday, usually afternoon, and travel to wherever I was going to work that week. I'd work the week and come home Friday. And that was about 70% of the time. So it was a lot of time on the road. A lot of benefits from that. I was getting to meet a lot of different people, get exposed to a lot of different situations. I was going places from the North Sea to the offshore platforms off of Louisiana, offshore California, refineries all throughout the United States, oil fields all throughout the United States. I was building up a heck of a black book, if you will, an address book, meeting [S2] Right. [S1] A lot of people, getting exposed to a lot of different problems and a lot of different solutions. So then Jimmy was born. All of a sudden, at Creole, a lot of people traveled, a lot of people. And as a young man, I would listen to these older guys. And one thing I heard a lot, and I heard it loud and clear, they lamented not being around to watch their kids grow up. Wow. And so here I am at Creole, a job that I love, a job that I'm loved at, and a company that I love working for. And I just decide that I'm not going to be that guy making those comments. So I quit. And when I quit, oil prices were at a record low. Mm-hmm. I was counseled, don't quit, stick with it. But you know, Debbie's dad was like, no, you got to take care of my daughter and my grandson. And, but I knew that, hey, this, you know, having life on this planet, that's a gift. And let's use this gift. Let's enjoy this gift. Right. So, all of a sudden it went from, I wasn't enjoying it anymore. And, so it was a hard thing to do, but I did leave. And, I was able to finally get another job, and I was working as a mechanic at a place called Bechtel. Bechtel's a big company. They had the Elk Hills oil fields out here. Yeah. And, before that, I had a short stint working on a drilling rig. Kind of renewed my faith in mankind having that job. When you're working on a rig, I was working on a single. Those are the toughest ones because you're just going hard all day. We were drilling shallow holes, so literally we were chasing the rig. We'd come to work. We knew it was in a certain area. We just kind of have to find it to get there because we would change holes every couple of days or change locations. But working on the rig really renewed my value in mankind, because everybody on the rig, it was a team. All we did was work hard, and the deal was, hey, set up the next crew, let's get to where we're circulating. That was kind of like where you got to take a breath when you circulate every once in a while for a few minutes. And if we're pulling a string, let's get the whole string pulled. And sometimes we'd even stay as a new crew came on to help through the tough stuff. And it was so great being around. That's just the attitude of everybody. Let's just get it done. Let's get it done. And you came to work. You worked hard all day. And, Dave, back then, if I was standing there and you bumped into me, you might have thought you bumped into an oak tree. I mean, I was in super physical shape, because that's all we did was work hard all day. I mean, physically hard all day.
Yeah.
And but there's a lot of smart people out there, too, because it's not easy. Drilling is some pretty intense technologies that have to be, thought about. So working on a rig, you have an opportunity to just work, and that's fine. Or you can kind of look, hey, what are we doing over here? What's the mud guy doing? Oh, well, he's logging this. He has to measure the specific gravity, and we have to get the ratios right. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, there's more to it than just, grunting. So that was a short stint of my life, but a very important stint, because it did give me a renewal for, man, there are a lot of people out there that do want to work, and today that still exists. And so then the job came up at Elk Hills, worked out there for a while, and that's when I had the moment that I decided, and Bechtel was, talk about a company that took care of its employees. Mm-hmm. They were certainly every bit of that. So there was never a complaint about the company. But, man, I just looked around, Dave, and I went, I promised myself I'm not going to last 5 years up here. Because I just felt like, as good as they took care of their employees, they're just, it just like seemed so many people were so unmotivated. And I didn't want to run in that group. And seemed like more people were interested in how much they could get away with not doing than getting accomplished. And, one of the statements that I've loved, it was Margaret Thatcher. She had made a statement that, think about your best day. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, it's a day that you got something accomplished. And that we all had great vacation days. I think you're on one of those now.
Right. Yep.
So, but that was when I decided that, hey, I'm not going to make it out here 5 years. Because that was a goal back then. I've always read business books and stuff like that, entrepreneur books. And the thing was, hey, where are you going to be 5 years from now? That's a common theme in a lot of them. Where are you going to be? And your decisions today should be supporting where you want to be 5 years from now. And so my decision was, I don't want to be here 5 years from now. So I started, you know, opening my eyes, opening my ears, listening for opportunities, thinking, who do I want to become? Who do I want to become? And an opportunity came up. Fortunately, I didn't even make it 4 years. It was just a little less than 4 years. I got a call. My dad had set it up. He said, hey, there's this company, Alpha Gauge in Bakersfield, that they could use a salesman. And I was like, oh, that's what I want to be. I want to be a salesman and a knowledgeable sales guy in the oil field. That's kind of following my dad's footsteps. So I went and talked to him. Alpha Gauge is a tiny company. It had an owner, two part-time employees, and a gal that helped in the office every once in a while. And so there was a big difference in thinking. The owner thought very small. And I was like, I was working as a mechanic, and I wrote him a 6-month business plan. Just said, hey, how about we do it this? And I came to him with it one day, and I walked in, and he was literally twiddling his thumbs, and he made a statement that I hate to this day. It's like fingernails on a chalkboard. He said, I asked him, what are you doing? He goes, oh, a little of this and a little of that, while he's twiddling his thumbs. I said, oh, I hate that statement to this day. Because you should be doing a lot more than a little of this and a little of that.
Right.
You should be out there making it happen. Right. So, I had the plan in my back pocket, and it was my vision for what Alpha Gauge could become in a very short amount of time. And he told me, he goes, well, you know, I hadn't gone to work for him yet. We were still talking. We were still negotiating if I was going to come or not. And, he said, we're just going to close the doors. I said, what? And he goes, yeah, we're just going to shut down. There's just not enough interest in this place. And I said, are you filing bankruptcy? He said, no, we're going out honorably. We're paying all our bills, and we're just stopping business. And would you be interested in selling the place? Well, yeah. So I made him, got some friends, modified my business plan to accommodate what it would take to buy it. And tried to get some of my friends to invest. A bunch of them said they would. None of them did when it came down to it. But my Uncle Joe did. As a matter of fact, when everybody else backed out, when it came time to pony up the money, I told Uncle Joe we didn't have enough money to get us through the first couple of payrolls. And so he just insisted that, and I said, I don't want to put your money at risk. And if you ever have an investor, if you're ever raising money, think about the investor's point, what they're thinking. Don't think about, hey, what am I going to do with your money? Think about how you're going to make his or her investment viable and something that they're glad they did. Right. And I've had so many opportunities to invest in other people's stuff, and when I hear what they have to say, it's they just have a story to get my money. They don't have a story about making my investment worthwhile and having returns. Right. And but it was just been natural for me. My thought was, hey, I got to make I can't take Uncle Joe's money, because I don't see a clear path to making it make money. See, just we're going to go out of business right away. We won't be able to afford payrolls. But he insisted. He goes, no, he goes, I would rather lose my money betting on you than have you not do this. I'll be disappointed if you don't do this. So you talk about a motivation. I can't let my Uncle Joe down.
What a statement. What did that do for you internally, especially as a newer entrepreneur? Like, hearing that statement from somebody you obviously love, and that vote of confidence, what did that do for you internally and emotionally?
Yeah, well, it motivated me. I felt like, well, shoot, I can't say no now. And then I can't let him down. And something about Uncle Joe, he knew that about me. That's how I work. So I came up with a different plan. I went back to the owners and said, "Hey, I want you to carry paper." Now, I was buying this place for a pretty small amount of money. Mm-hmm. If memory serves me right, it was like $35,000. And I wanted them to carry some paper so I could make the next few payrolls. So it's like, okay, if I got to do this, the path I was on wasn't going to work, and I recognize that. But I also recognize I can't walk away from this deal now because I feel the obligation to Uncle Joe and somewhat to myself. He made me believe further in myself. That's the feeling I had. All of a sudden, it was like I had a stronger belief that, yeah, I know I can do this then. So the challenge has been set. Now I have to rise to it. So I have to think different. And that happens all the time. Dave, I can tell you how many times I would have gone out of business if I didn't change course, didn't start thinking different. You know, there's another statement I've read in one of the many books, and it says, "What got you where you are today won't necessarily get you where you need to be tomorrow." And it's true. You have to think. The stuff that worked to get me here won't necessarily get me to the next level that ultimately I want to get to. So with that, when the owners agreed, they didn't care. I say they didn't care. That's not quite accurate. They didn't have nothing to lose anyway. They were just going to shut the doors. Mm-hmm. And so, hey, they're getting something instead of nothing. And one of the things that came with Alpha Gauge was some IP, some intellectual property. And they had a sampler that would sample oil production, the oil production off specific wells. And it was a cool little device. And back in the day, it was the modern thing. And so when I bought Alpha Gauge, I got the patent to that. And there was enough parts and pieces there to make, I don't know, another 40 or 50 samplers before I had to order more material. Mm-hmm. And I got lucky. I got an order like 2 weeks into owning the place. I got an order for like 40 of them. That made enough money I could pay the company off. And I say I got lucky. I went out there and I knocked on the doors, let people know what I was doing, where I was at. And maybe that's why I got lucky, because somebody said, "Hey, you know what? We're going to need some of these samplers." And
You know, a statement that you've always said growing up, you said, "You know what I found out?" You always would say, "Is the harder I work, the luckier I get."
That's right. Yeah, that's all right.
And so I do believe, yes, things can happen, but I think it's a result of your hard work and being willing. If you didn't knock on these doors, make these things, that opportunity wouldn't come. So, yeah.
Then you wouldn't get lucky. But at the same point, don't ever sell it short. Don't give yourself too much credit, because I've seen a lot of people work really hard and not catch a piece of good luck, and ultimately end up not having their efforts be successful. But those are the type of people that don't give up and they change gears and find another way. But always. One of my favorite songs that resonated with me was always stay humble and kind. And if you do that, you know, the good things happen. You know, I've gone through a lot of business travails, and there's no one silver bullet that works in every situation, but there are some generalities that help a lot. And I've always felt like actions speak louder than words.
Right.
And a lot of times we're going to have our supporters and we're going to have our detractors. And there's people that are going to be out there trying to find their way, trying to compete or whatever the case. And they're going to say things about you that aren't necessarily true or aren't true at all. And my thought was, hey, am I going to get mad, which is not a really good emotion? It can be if it's managed right, but or am I just going to demonstrate that it's obvious that's not true? This is how I work. This is who I am. But there comes a time where sometimes you just have to stand up and take it head on. So I've taken a role where, hey, actions speak louder than words, but I've learned it. And I learned it the hard way, where I just sat back and thought everything's going to come out right, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the lies get believed. And so you have to know when it's time to stand up. But, you know, if we learn the lessons, we get better as the days go on. And so, you know, a lot of the stuff you'll hear me say today is this cool little statements that I've heard that I live by, that every once in a while I make up my own, but most of them are stuff that I've heard, and it just resonated with me and makes sense. And it's like, hey, I want to emulate that. Or
for sure. So one thing I'm curious about, Ray, and this is what this whole show is about too, is like, it's called How I Discovered My Gift. And I have a guess. I'm going to take a guess at it, but I want to hear from you what you feel. When I think of your most dominant gift, at least from my perspective, I think one of your gifts is the ability, I mean, just your love for people and your genuine, like, love for people, right? As one of your strong gifts. And then the other one I think of is your optimistic attitude. But what would you say? What would you say is, when you think about your most dominant gift, what gifts, what do you think those most dominant gifts are?
You know, Dave, one of your gifts is your observations. Those are both very accurate. I do love people, and there's certain things that, you know, looking back, I realized all through my life, I never knew how old somebody was. You know, I don't know if a guy was 15 or 25 or 35, just because I just treated everybody the same. I wanted to know what they knew. And so when you talk to people, they talk back. Today you're talking to me, so I'm doing a lot of talking, but I also do a lot of listening, and I like to learn from other people. But probably my best gift isn't coming up with ideas, but evaluating ideas and making the decisions on which ones I want to put together and how I want to put them together. And I love listening to other people's ideas, and I get a lot of credit for coming up with an idea, and I don't feel like it's deserved credit. What I did was I listened to a lot of different things and I put them together, and it seems like a new idea, but it was just ideas that I processed and came up with. Say it again.
Can you give us an example of that?
Okay. So we have a compressor package. We do a lot of gas compressor packages. And so I'm looking at this situation where the customer can't get from the low pressure to the high pressure. And that's what you do with compression. You make the pressure higher. And he can only get 2/3 of the way there with the system he's got now. So it's like, well, let's just put in a new system that's got an additional stage so you can get there. It's going to cost you a bunch more money. And I remember seeing something at a different location where they were needing fuel boosting. And so they used to get their fuel right off of the SoCal gas line, but they brought in a new piece of equipment, and it needed a higher inlet pressure to feed the fuel to it. So they brought in a compressor booster. And so I'm looking at this guy's situation, that he's got a compressor where he's pulling gas off the field, and the more you pull gas off the field, the lower the field pressure gets, but he still needs to discharge it at the same pressure. So the differential was getting more and more and more, to where his compressor couldn't accommodate the differential. Yeah. And so I started thinking about that fuel booster idea. So I said, hey, why don't I get another little compressor to feed this one? I'll take this low pressure here, that, because the field pressure is getting lower and lower and lower.
Right.
And I'll pull it off of that and feed that. Well, it's, I don't feel like that was my idea. It was something I seen, but I was putting it in a different application. And mm-hmm. so I got credit for this great idea. And so instead of the customer spending a ton of money, he only spent a quarter of a ton of money, and he still got accomplished what he needed to get accomplished.
Wow, that's awesome. I love that. Ray, I'd love to go into the development, right? So I kind of figured you read books and like you were always passionate about learning. I know being an entrepreneur today, there's so much development you have to do personally for a business to grow. Because as the leader, as you develop, that's how the business goes. And so what kind of development have you done behind the scenes over the years? You know, people may see an Alpha Gauge, they may see an Energy Link, they may see all these amazing businesses and businesses you've invested in, things you've done, but nobody really sees the unseen hours, right? The work that goes behind the scenes in the dark, up late, early mornings, reading books, developing yourself, going to things to develop yourself. What's that been like for you, the development of Ray?
So, you know, I love being around people, and I almost have a fear of being lonely. But at the same point, it's those lonely times that if I'm making a drive out to Arizona, I'll get, you know, a business book on tape. That's what they used to call them. now they're on Audible. But, you know, back in the day, I used to have the cassette tapes that I'd put in and listen to them and just get the ideas of other people. And so a lot of the times you don't stop thinking about business. And I dream in color. That's a good thing. But there's been times in my life where I didn't dream at all. At least I didn't think I did. I didn't have memories of them. And when I'm excited about what I'm doing, I dream about it. And so a lot of my dreams have to do with business and business ideas. And when I get when I have those moments where I'm alone, I'm usually thinking about business or a better idea about how to do something. And it's just my nature. I just can't help it. I can't turn it off. Mm. And when I first took a job at Elk Hills as a mechanic, I went from a job where I had a lot of responsibilities. Even as a young man, I had a lot of responsibility, a lot of scheduling, planning, juggling a lot of balls. And when I took that job as a mechanic, I would show up to work. They'd give me a work order. I go out in the field and complete it. And at the end of the day, I had nothing to think about. And at first, that was an incredible luxury, but it wore off very soon. And it's like, I had to start thinking about stuff. Well, that's when they first started coming out with the computers, the Texas Instruments 99.4. I used cassette tapes. That was my first one. So I just started self-teaching myself on the computer. So to me, it wasn't anything extraordinary. It was just, I wanted to fight the boredom. And I loved socializing, getting out, hooting and hollering with people. But to a degree, I don't need to do that every day. But so then what else does an entrepreneur do? You keep up with what's going on in your area of interest. And one of the best ways to do that is trade shows. You get around other people that are interested in the things you want, stuff you understand, and then you see new innovations, new ideas. And that's what trade shows are for, is to bring that. And I can't think of a trade show I've been to that I didn't get something great out of it. And to this day, I still find myself having a hard time sometimes justifying going to these trade shows, because they're expensive. They take you out of your routines of what you're doing. But every time at the end of it, I'm glad I did. But there's some certain disciplines that even as an owner, I instill. I go to a trade show. I write a report on a trip report. Hey, what did I do? Who did I talk to? Because when I'm at the show, I'm going to think about, hey, I have this obligation to write a report. And who do I turn the report into? Me. So, but I still write it. And then it makes me make sure I'm getting a benefit out of the trip, that it's not just a vacation where, hey, I'm getting away from everybody for everything. And I always feel like there's an obligation to get better and take advantage of the situations like that. Hey, if I'm around all these smart people, let me talk to them. Let me ask them what they know. Let me get their ideas so I can formulate my ideas. And
I love that. So take us into the development, right? So you bought Alpha Gauge. You and your Uncle Joe put an investment and then you get this big sale. And then what happens from there? What happens with Alpha Gauge? Because I remember it definitely ballooned from what I remember in childhood. Take us through what transpired from how you got it to what you turned it into.
So, bought Alpha Gauge and got that lucky stroke right out of the gate. That was good. And there was a couple of technicians, and they were paid on piecework. So if there wasn't any work, you know, they didn't come in, and I didn't like that. The gal that was helping us out really wasn't interested in staying on and helping. So basically, and then the owner guy that was going to help out, he wasn't any help. So it was just two guys. That's really what I bought. And built those guys up and started hiring more people. Took some risks just based on faith. Hey, I'm going to, I can't go to the next step if I'm not prepared. So I'm going to need another service truck. I'm going to need to put tools in it. And I'm going to need somebody to stick in it and drive it. And so every nickel we made went right back into the company. I mean, it was just, hey, we got to build this thing up. Because the point wasn't so much to just make a living. The point was to build up a company. And I can remember the pride that went through my system when I would be out there closing the gates at 8 o'clock at night. Everybody, you know, in the oil field, 7 to 3:30 is the time frame. Everybody's long gone home, and at 8 o'clock, I'm just leaving and I'm shutting the gates, and I'm just full of pride. Wow, this is my place to build up. And then I'd get there 6 in the morning, an hour before, you know, we started, and opening the gates and feeling that same sense of pride. And if that stuff motivates you, then you can be successful and want to get there. So, so with that, not being afraid to hire somebody, go out and find the work, get to work. And then it got to a point where I needed to hire a salesman, but that was my role. I did all the sales. I would go out and talk to customers, get the service jobs, get the repair work, whatever the case was. And but then I realized, man, my style is we have to take care of our customers, and the style of business we have is very face to face. We're out in front of them. And, right. So we're saying, hey, we'll come pick your gauges up, bring them in our shop and repair them and bring them back to you. And, so then I realized, well, shoot, now I'm starting to grow and I'm getting new customers, but the new customers I'm getting, I'm losing my old customers because I'm not taking care of them. I'm not getting that FaceTime with them. I'm not being in front of them. Yeah. So I realized, man, I'm going to have to hire a salesman. And I couldn't find anybody that was me. And that's something and that's a growth moment, because you realize, hey, you have to, let people do their work the way they do it. You can give them the bottom line and the expectations, but give them the freedom to get there. Don't tell them how they have to work. Just tell them what needs to get accomplished and demonstrate that it can be done. And I had to learn that. But I did. So next thing you know, now we got a couple of salespeople on, and so we can hire some more technicians, and the shop's too small. So there was a building next door came open, so we got it, but needed some more trucks. So I went to Taft. This guy that had a competing company, but a small thinker, he was selling off his trucks. He was doing the same thing, Bob Shugart. He was closing his doors. Mm-hmm. So I went over to his place and I was going to buy a truck, and I looked around and I said, why don't I just buy everything? You got some test equipment, you got a couple of other trucks. And so we made a deal right there. So He was renting the shop that he had in Taft, which is a city about 30 miles from Bakersfield. Mm-hmm. So I went ahead and made a deal to take over his rent, buy his trucks from him, and hired him. So he came to work for me. So that's how we got our first branch. So now we had the building we started in and the one next door, and then we had a place in Taft. And then I did a very similar deal down in Long Beach. This company was struggling to survive. They owed us some money, and they weren't going to be able to pay it. So we made a deal where I took them over, and I hired them. They all stayed on the payroll, and just so now all of a sudden we got, you know, a branch in Long Beach, a branch in Taft, the place we started in Bakersfield times two. And
this is Monopoly in real life.
Monopoly in real life, yeah. So the next thing you know, I get a knock on the door, and it's these two very well-dressed gentlemen in very shiny shoes. They announce that they're from GE and that we've hit the radar screen and they're interested in buying us. And I'm not for sale. And he goes, you probably are, you just don't know it. And sure enough, we were. So they went through their diligence and never saw him again for 2 years. And then a company called Hanover got interested in us. They wanted to make a move into California. We did a deal every year out in Taft where we had a customer appreciation barbecue. Oh. And so we would do a barbecue at lunchtime. Taft's in the middle of the oil field, so a lot of people would come in for lunch. And we'd have barbecue and tri-tip and good old oil field lunch, and people would eat and go back to work. And then at 3:30, when everybody got off, they could come back, and then we'd have a band play, and then we had the Budweiser truck there, and it got a little more fun. It was so a guy from Hanover had come out and introduced himself, and he said, "Hey, I really like what I see here." Because we use that barbecue as a kind of a trade show. All of the different manufacturers that we represented, we'd have them come set up a booth like they would in a trade show. So it was kind of, hey, you got to learn about our product offerings and stuff like that. And the guy from Hanover said, we want to buy your company. And I went, oh. So I shared that with one of my friends at Weatherford Global, and he goes, oh, man. You do anything with Hanover, we'll never do business with you. That's our competitor in the rest of the nation, and they're trying to move into California. And so at that time, Weatherford Global was a joint venture between Weatherford and GE. Yeah. So they got together, made an offer to buy me, and their offer was better, so I ultimately took it. And so the GE guys were right 2 years prior. Yeah, you're for sale, you just don't know it. So when the... But it's a fun story about how that came together too. They came in, it was a really exciting time of my life. I was getting a lot of attention from these big companies. I'm going to Houston to meet with the big shots at Hanover. I'm going to Dallas to meet with the big shots at Weatherford Global. And it was pretty cool. And so Weatherford Global puts together their offer. They send it to me. Express mail return receipt requested. And I read the offer and I'm like, wow, they really think I'm worth this. They want to invest this in me. And I set it aside.
So inspiring, Ray. Like, you always inspire me, but hearing more about, like, your, like you said, the entrepreneur's desire we don't get into it to just retire and sit on the beach all day, right? There's a deeper drive, a deeper purpose, you said, that's pushing you. You know, for you to do what you do, you know, there has to be an internal motor that pushes you to do this. Because, you know, somebody could have been settled at Alpha Gauge when you sold it. Then you could just, I'm done. Like, but you have a drive. So thank you for being an amazing entrepreneur, father, husband, leader, example in the world. The world needs more Ray Millers in the world. And I'm sincerely blessed to consider you a father in my life, and I pray I hope to make you proud, and Thank you for all that you've poured into me and Nick and obviously Jim and Nick and Sabrina. And I'm so grateful, so thankful. And I always believe in giving people flowers while they're here. Right. And I just, you know what I mean? So I just want to give you your flowers and say how much I appreciate you. I love you and adore you and appreciate you, sir. So thank you. Well, again, thanks, Ray. Thanks, listeners, for listening. I've enjoyed it so tremendously.
I searched all over the world, struggling to find it.
Dear listener, I would like to thank you so much for listening to How I Discovered My Gift with yours truly, David D. Simons. As a token of my appreciation, I would love to give to you my most important piece of work to date, and it's called the Purpose Gift Tape. It's a motivational mixtape geared towards helping you to identify your gifts, which ultimately lead to you discovering your purpose. This is a 6-track album I poured my heart and soul into. It includes beautiful beats and amazing spoken word over it, and I'd love to give that to you as a free gift, as a token of my appreciation for being a part of the community. So to get your copy, all you need to do is go to podcast.daviddsimons.com. That's podcast.david, the middle initial D, Simons, Simons.com, and get yours today. Thank you for being a listener. I'll catch you on the next episode. How I Discover My Gift with David D. Simons is proud to be of the amazing and illustrious Alive Podcast Network.